Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, I'm Peter Seabrook, here to exchange the latest news, views, and a bit of timely advice on all matters gardening. Later on in the podcast, I'll be speaking to Kevin Hobbs. He's the author of the book, The Story of Trees, and How They Change the World. My thanks to this week's sponsor, Sutton's Seeds of Torquay. We usually kick off with the weather, and I have to tell you, between sharp hail showers last Saturday, several of us set about clearing an overgrown hedge in a small garden in Oxfordshire. There were one or two old stumps of elder and ivy had grown all over it, and some of that had flopped. It was a real mess, and we wanted to get it sorted before the birds started nesting. Pigeons had pretty well cleared the berries from the ivy. But the one message from all of that, there were two or three really quite strong thorn trees with trunks about 2 or 3 inches across. We trimmed those back but left the trunk about 6 to 8 feet tall and then dug around the roots and chopped them. You need that 6 to 8 foot trunk to give leverage to pull things out. My landscape colleague has a tool called a spud. It's about 6 feet tall, steel, and circular, about an inch or inch and a half in diameter. It has a knob on the top and a very short, stout blade at the base. And with his strong physical energy, it's amazing how he can lift that and drop that sharp edge against root and literally spud things out. What a wonderful tool that is. So we've made quite a clearing where that overgrown hedge was and took several loads to the local recycling skip. And that was an education. Goodness, the stuff people throw away. I was amazed to see quite big logs in amongst all the other green stuff in the green skip. That'd make the machine shudder a bit, I would think, when they needed to shred that ready for composting. It was quite a busy week. Earlier on, I'd been to Didcot with the meeting of the David Colgrave trustees. The number of students applying for grants, scholarships and bursaries has increased rapidly over the past year, and we spent several hours allocating thousands of pounds worth of funds to worthy applicants. I stopped off at Reading on the way back, spent an hour or so digging an allotment where the allotmenteer had bought some spent mushroom compost in bags. When I tipped that out to dig it in, didn't look like spent mushroom compost to me. Looked like some of that municipal green waste that I'd seen in the Oxford recycling unit. I can't think why commercial companies can't put on the outside of the bag what's on the inside. Too many rather mixed things are sold under the wrong names. It'll be perfectly good. It'll improve the soil. But it won't be quite as good as a spent mushroom compost would have done. And then I finally dropped off at the Royal Windsor Rose and Horticultural Society launch meeting at Windsor. If any of you are in that area and interested in gardening, you should certainly think about joining that society. goodness, what an evening. They had a speaker on the gin distilling, who was brilliant, and then John Anderson, the head gardener at Savile and Valley Gardeners, he spoke. Goodness, what an enthusiastic and well-informed man he is. John, you were brilliant. And then the finale was Michael Marriott, who, of course, is the marketing director of David Austin Roses, been there for years. He was brilliant too. It was quite an evening. One thing that I did note, Michael's favourite David Austin Rose is a variety called Lady of Shalott, a really deep apricot. With all his years' experience, picking his favourite should be a pretty good bet if you're looking for a nice rose in the garden. I hear too that the Associate Professional Landscapers, APL, have joined up with Professor David Stevens to build a show garden at BBC Gardeners World Live in June, and they will demonstrate behind-the-surface snapshot of landscaping practices. Now, David's pretty skilled. He's been designing show gardens for a long time, so I look forward with great interest to see what they have to do at the NEC next June. When it comes to day-to-day advice, this week I've helped move a Buxus ball. You know, if you've got box and you need to transplant it, this is the perfect time, March, early April. It's pretty fibrous rooted, and so if you lift it with a big ball of soil, they'll move pretty well. And several people have asked a bit of help with rose pruning, so I've had my secateurs out and left them quite a bit shorter than they were before. Hybrid tea and the multi-flowered so-called floribunda type roses every now and again, second or third week in March, really improve if they're hit quite hard and pruned well back. I've sown also a pot of a recently introduced self-blanching celery that is pink, called Blush. I'll be very interested to see what that looks like with the what we call dirty celery, the earthing up celery. There are both white and pink kinds. And I'll be interested to see whether the self-blanching in a pink form is as tasty as its dirty celery sister variety.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
I'm very pleased to introduce my guest today, Kevin Hobbs. Kevin's got a recent book. It's called The Story of Trees and How They Changed the World. Do you know, it's a very interesting title. Kevin, yes, what's behind the title and how did trees change the world?
I've always been fascinated by trees and have long wanted to write a book that's more than just a descriptive botanical book, because behind every tree and indeed every plant, there's a story. My colleague Dave West, who co-wrote the book with me, and I chose 100 trees that have had a significant impact on the way we live throughout history. And it was a tough job to limit the list to just 100 trees, of course.
What's the most significant then from that 100? What's the top one?
Well, it's very difficult to choose just one tree. It's just like asking a parent to choose their favourite child, really. we began by exploring the evolution of trees, really, and going back 385 million years ago to a very primitive fern-like tree called Wattiza. The Wattiza predated the dinosaurs by 140 million years, so there's certainly no interaction with humankind, but that's where we began. And of course, these primitive plants and trees created the climatic conditions that allowed for evolution of us. But fast forwarding to more recent times, we started to look at trees that are more familiar, like the yew tree. And there's many fantastic stories associated with that humble tree.
Come on, whet our appetite. What fascinating story with yews?
As research for the book, I wanted to actually look into archaeological evidence and discovered a fairly recent discovery of the Clacton Spear. The Clacton Spear is 400,000 years old. That was dug up.
Here, that's a bit before my time. I remember going by coach as a school child to Clacton for the day.
Yeah,
I didn't think going back. Did you say 400,000 years?
400,000 years. It's just incredible. It was being utilised by man all those years ago, Neolithic man. But if you want to touch some living history when it comes to you, just not far from Powys, there's a churchyard. I won't name the churchyard for now because they get inundated with visitors. But if your listeners want to learn more, they of course can buy the book. near Powys, there's a churchyard with a yew tree there that has been dated to 5,070 years old. What I find amazing is that you can go and touch that tree, and you're connected to such amazing history. To think that tree was a seedling around 3045 BC, around 500 years before the Great Pyramids of Giza were built, and really brings history to life as far as I'm concerned.
Well, I mean, I would have lumped for oaks, thinking myself as an Englishman. I mean, there's an oak at Hatfield House, I think, either planted by Queen Elizabeth I or she sat under it or something. I mean, oaks must have affected the way we live.
Absolutely. Yeah, of course, oaks are featured in the book. They really enabled the British Empire to develop because, of course, it was oak that was used in the building of ships. Forests like the New Forest were established primarily as a hunting ground for royalty, but also many of the trees that grew within the New Forest were used for shipbuilding. And in fact, many of the greatest oaks were, of course, chopped down.
But Kevin, you're a great plantsman. It's not just trees. So why trees in the case of the book?
I was very much inspired by the modern day plant explorer Roy Lancaster. As it happens, my parents discovered that Roy lived close to where I grew up in Romsey. I started to collect Roy's books at an early age, and seeing the pictures of his travels and the magnificent specimens of trees he had come across really inspired me. And of course, just like so many children, I love to climb trees. You know, it's just fascinating to be up in the canopy and to observe the detail of the bark and the leaves and the acorns, of course. And like so many children, of course, the oak was the first tree I grew from an acorn. And so trees really mean a lot to me. And I love the fact that you can plant a tree and leave a lasting legacy for generations to come. And I planted many trees over the years, and now approaching 51 years old tomorrow. I feel
many happy returns.
Thank
for
you.
Tomorrow.
A great sense of pride to see these towering trees that I planted as a young boy. So really, it began with trees, and it began with the travels of Roy Lancaster.
I mean, we have a schools campaign each September, going out collecting acorns, putting them in a polythene bag, cold and damp until we see the root emerging and the kids then pot them up. And a year later, when the new intake comes to the school, they plant one of the seedlings and we like to photograph that year with their tree. And then, of course, they grow quicker than the tree for a year or two. But once the oak seedling gets its roots down, then it leaves them standing.
Yeah. I feel connected to that approach because when I was at junior school, we went to a parents' evening, and I was there with my parents, and the teacher said, "Kevin's far from academic. He should consider perhaps being a builder's labourer." I don't know why builder's labourer was suggested. I don't know where that came from. But I wish I knew where that teacher lived now. I'd send a copy of one of my books that I've written. I'd say that I became a director of world-famous Hillier Nurseries. And I've travelled the world. I've advised royalty. I've had so many wonderful experiences in horticulture. And if you're motivated and passionate about a subject, you'll always go far.
Well, you mentioned royalty. I mean, you've actually given some advice to the Queen, I think.
Absolutely. Well, during my time at Hillier, of course, and Hillier continues to have the royal warrant, we were approached by Lady Elizabeth Anson, the Queen's cousin, a few years back, just prior to the Queen's 90th birthday. And we were asked to come in and visit Frogmore House within the grounds of Windsor.
Goodness, I hope you had your shoes clean and your tie on, hey?
Absolutely, yes. It was quite an experience, actually. Along with Lady Elizabeth Anson, there were a number of members of the Royal Household and Parks. And we had this golf buggy, beautiful golf buggy with lovely cream leather seats and all decked out. And the amusing story is, as we drove around Frogmore, I was so excited to see the trees in particular, some very well-established trees. And I was taking copious notes and talking to the head gardener, and I hadn't realised that my biro had jiggled along and scribbled on the beige leather seats.
Oh, goodness.
So every time that everyone on the buggy looked to the left or the right into the distance, I got out a tissue and was frantically trying to wipe off this biro from the seat. But all joking aside, you know, what fantastic gardens and grounds. And Her Majesty was looking for some more colour. Of course, I was able to recommend lots of colourful shrubs and herbaceous perennials primarily. And what really surprised me, Peter, was the following April, out of the blue, came a royal invite to Claridge's to celebrate this project and as a thank you from Her Majesty. And it was a great event, and I did get to meet Her Majesty, albeit briefly, and she was very appreciative of everyone's combined efforts.
But you also worked alongside one or two really great plant breeders. I'm thinking of Peter Dummer. Were there any special plant there? I mean, if you had to mention one shrub which you're particularly proud to be connected or associated with, what would that be?
Oh, that's difficult. I have to say, you know, you mentioned Peter Dummer. I was a Hillier apprentice, and I got to work with what you could arguably describe as the last of the great propagators and breeders. Peter Dummer is famous for breeding Cotinus grace, a very popular and common garden plant around the temperate world. And Peter, you know, he was a very knowledgeable chap, quite a character. And I was a very enthusiastic apprentice that kept nagging. And I nagged Peter that I could join him in some of his hybridization. And eventually he let me carry the ladder while Peter hybridized magnolia. And what an opportunity, because the Hillier Arboretum is the biggest collection of woody plants in the world, and with lots of magnolias, and Peter would climb up the ladder and hybridize between these different species and varieties. And he said to me, Nipper, he said, by the time anyone sees these hybrids flower, I'll be long gone. And that was quite sobering to a young man. I was probably only about 17. And sure enough, it was true, of course, because most species of magnolias don't flower as seedlings for 15, 20 years. And sure enough, Peter Dummer was long gone when the first of the seedlings flowered. What dedication, really, to go to that trouble, knowing that you're unlikely to see the results. It was Peter Dummer, Peter Moore, who's still with us and still hybridizing many great plants, such as Choice Aztec Pearl. And of course, Alan Postel, who, again, is still with us. In fact, I spoke to him this morning. And Alan's famous for a number of plants, the most famous of which is Daphne Bahula Jacqueline Postel. And at this time of year, its scent fills so many gardens throughout throughout the world with such a sweet, strong perfume.
I think everybody should try and have one of those in their garden, don't you think?
Absolutely, yes. I mean, it's incredible for such a dreary time of the year, kind of late January, early February, and they're very tolerant, actually, of quite a range of conditions.
That was going to be my question, you know, how demanding is it to grow and what soil does it need?
So being based in near Winchester, we've got a lot of chalk soils, and Daphne Bula will happily grow on chalk soils, happily grow on clay soils. It dislikes very wet winter conditions. That will it'll be poorly and sickly if it's too wet at the roots during the winter. But other than that, it's tolerant of a wide range of soils. It's relatively slow to get going. When you buy a plant, they're often very expensive because they're very difficult to propagate. But once it starts to establish, it becomes quite an upright bush that just becomes a tower of flower, and a must-have, really, for the winter garden. And often in short supply, but if you look carefully in specialist nurseries throughout the UK, your listeners will surely find what they're looking for.
Now, Kevin, what about the future? What are you working on now?
So I work for a company called Wetland Plants International, which is a consumer brand. We work behind the scenes developing new plants, ornamental plants primarily, but also unusual edibles. And very pleased because joined us a year ago is Charles Vallan, who is a very famous breeder of plants across lots of different genera. So as you can imagine, we've got lots of creative ideas, and there's lots to look forward to in the future. And I'm also very interested in urban greening and selecting the right trees and plants for the modern built environment, and that's something I'm, you know, involved in. In fact, I'm meeting Dr. Ross Cameron at Sheffield University next week, who shares my passion for making sure we promote the best plants and trees for different situations.
Well, Kevin, you're not going to be out of work there. Even the politicians are recommending we plant trees now. Yeah, just mention again the book, The Story of Trees. Who's the publisher?
It's Lawrence King, and they've done a fantastic job. Dave and I are very happy. The illustrator is Thibaut Harem, and he's done a lovely job of producing illustrations for each of the 100 entries. And Lawrence King have made a very nice book. It's very tactile, very nice to hold. And what I like about The Story of Trees is just how they produced it and put it together. It's fantastic.
Thanks very much for joining us today, Kevin. Look forward to seeing you in the near future.
You're welcome. And thank you for all your support over the years, Peter, to myself and the industry generally.
What's on? Well, there's a shrub pruning demo at the Royal Horticultural Society garden at Rosemore in Torrington, Devon, on the 8th of March. So if you're down that way and you're not sure about how to prune shrubs, could be a very useful place to go. And for my tailpiece, I've just picked up one or two really interesting facts from Graham Clark's miscellany in amateur gardening. You know, Graham was on earlier telling us about his earlier experiences in the Royal Parks and elsewhere. And I don't know where he keeps finding these fascinating facts and figures each week. This week he's taken numbers as his theme and tells us that there are 2,000 species of bees. all of which can fly backwards and forwards. Hadn't stopped to think about that, but yes, when you watch bees, they do fly into the flower and then fly backwards out of them in their never-ending quest for nectar and bloom. In 2015, apparently, he tells us, there were 300,000 council allotments. Well, from my time on a Reading allotment, they may have a waiting list, but there's an awful lot of plots that could do with my spade just to tidy them up. And why is there so much rubbish left? Old baths, all kinds of rusting wheelbarrows and debris. Isn't it time we had a really good purge and cleaned up some of our allotments? My thanks to this week's sponsor, Sutton Seeds of Torquay, and of course to my producer, Rich Jarman, and you for listening. Look forward to joining you again next week.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.